do want to keep it. Then I went back, and some of the stuff I think Justin talked about last time, the connection between the removal of idolatry and how that he's finally the king that corrects all the way back to Solomon. Solomon, Ahaz, and Manasseh specifically. And it mentions other kings in there also. And Justin said y'all talked about that some last week, but I thought that was important to put in here, because it's amazing when you think about that. Now, we've been hundreds of years, but some of the idolatry that Solomon allowed in was still in existence. It's still influencing people. So you can talk about, we've seen many reformers, but particularly Hezekiah, and then even when Manasseh comes back, this lingering effect of their idolatry. That some of the things that they tear down, now maybe they didn't use them, maybe they quit using them, but they didn't tear them down. And apparently what would happen then is somebody later on would start using them again to sacrifice to false gods. So I just think that's really interesting how he specifically says Josiah goes back and finally tries to correct all those wrongs and tears down everything and corrects 400 years of idolatry. So I appreciate Justin taking the class last week. So we're going to spend most of tonight, I think, still on Josiah. And we're going to talk about specifically, Justin said y'all didn't get heavily into the restoration of the Passover. Is that right, Justin?
Correct.
That's right. All right, so I want to go back to what we talked about a couple weeks ago. And that is this connection of this idea of Hezekiah and Josiah being types or shadows of Christ. Because I got to thinking about, why is it? So how many feasts did the Israelites have to celebrate each year in Jerusalem? Three, right? Okay, the first one listed every time, whether it's in Exodus or in Leviticus or Numbers or Deuteronomy, is the Passover. Okay, but there were three feasts. So why do you think the Passover, in both cases, seemed to be the first thing that they restore? Hezekiah does it, and we're not told of any other feast that Hezekiah restores. Now, maybe he did. He restored some other things, priesthood and things like that. But we're only specifically told about the Passover. And then we get to Josiah, and the same thing. Josiah mentions, the Kings and Chronicles mentions specifically about Josiah implementing the Passover again. And in fact, it says in Josiah that there was no Passover that had been done. You remember since when? Since how long it had been since the Passover had been celebrated that way in Josiah's case? Yeah, back to the Judges, which I thought was kind of interesting. That means the Passover never got celebrated, however he means it there, to the extent, even under David and even under Solomon. That Josiah ends up, celebrating here. So why the Passover? Let's talk about a little bit. Let's remember back what the Passover was specifically all about. We know the general truth of the Passover, right? What was the Passover for? Why did they celebrate the Passover? Okay. All right. So deliverance from Egypt, right? So why was that more important than all the other celebrations? Okay. They've been in captivity. Yep. Big day, for sure. Okay. All right. They wouldn't have been a people if they... Well, they were people before they celebrated the Passover there, right?
They were slaves. They were a nation.
Okay. They were a little nation before, right? When they come to Egypt, you could say, right? But they become a mighty nation, I guess you could say. Yeah, in Egypt, for sure. Okay. Just...
It's certainly a religious holiday, but not in the same way as, like, the Day of Atonement. Something like that's strictly religious. This would be something that you would imagine, whether Baal's in or Molech's in or whoever we're worshiping, we still remember when we came out of Egypt.
Right.
And whoever did it, we're going to give credit to, but probably this story is such a part of their history and not just tied to religious significance. That would be something that they probably are holding on to the story. And it would be something easy, I think, to go out to people and say, hey, remember this thing, we're going to celebrate.
Okay.
We all know that it's and there's a celebration that goes along with it. We're going to bring it back.
Okay. So you're saying it would have been easy for people to latch onto that and
culturally,
do it. Right.
Yeah, I think
right.
It would have been an easy thing to start.
But it seems the reason he does it, I think that's probably true, but it seems the reason he does it is why?
Because
he finds the book of the law and he reads in there about the Passover. Okay? So, anybody else before we go read it? Let's go look at Leviticus 23. And they actually give a little more. So the first time we read about the Passover is when the last plague comes, right? And God tells them to celebrate it. But you get a more flavor for what they were supposed to do about remembering it from the other accounts in Leviticus and Deuteronomy especially. All right, in Leviticus 23, starting in verse 4. There are the appointed feasts of the Lord, the holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at the time appointed for them. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at twilight, is the Lord's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month, the Feast of Unleavened Bread of the Lord. So the Feast of Unleavened Bread and the Passover were connected. And later on, they almost are spoken of the same feast, right? So the Feast of Unleavened Bread along with the Passover, okay? In the Feast of Unleavened Bread of the Lord, for 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall have a holy convocation, you shall not do any ordinary work, but you shall present a food offering to the Lord for 7 days. On the seventh day is a holy convocation. Okay? So that's where they talk about this idea of connecting the Feast of Unleavened Bread and the idea of a holy convocation. This is something that is set apart, obviously, holy by God, right? Okay, now look over at Deuteronomy. Now this is right before they're getting ready to go into the land, right? So as they go into the land, there is this repeating of most of the law to remind them, this generation that had not died in the wilderness, that had been faithful, and they're about to go into the land. So in chapter 16, verse 1 of Deuteronomy, observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover to the Lord your God. For in the month of Abib, the Lord your God brought you out of Egypt by night. So here's the connection with bringing him out of Egypt, right? And you shall offer the Passover sacrifice to the Lord your God from the flock or the herd at the place that the Lord will choose to make his name dwell there. Where would that finally be? Jerusalem, right? That's the place the Lord would choose. That's the city of David. That's where the temple would be. And that's where they were supposed to eventually be the permanent place of celebrating the Passover. You shall eat no unleavened bread with it. 7 days you shall eat it with unleavened bread, the bread of affliction. For you came out of the land of Egypt in haste, that all the days of your life you may remember the day when you came out of the land of Egypt. Now, what were they supposed to remember about that day? Just that they got out of Egypt? Did what? Okay, God chose them, but what about this event was supposed to tell them about God?
The bread of affliction?
Yeah, it was bread of affliction because that was, they were always to remember what?
Slavery.
The slavery part of it, right? They were always to remember how bad it was in Egypt. Why? Why would he care that they remember that? Why would he just say, let's not ever think about Egypt again? It was terrible there. Why? Because you don't want to go back, right? If you forget how bad it was, you'll go back to it, right? If you start longing for it, you'll go back. Hebrews chapter 11 talks about that, even about Abraham and these men of great faith. If they'd have wanted to, if they kept thinking about and longing for where they came from, then they would not have sought where they were going. So this is not, don't remember this, but remember how bad it was. It is the bread of affliction. Isaiah chapter 30 uses the term the bread of adversity and the waters of affliction. I love that terminology there. He's not specifically talking about the Passover there, but I think you can connect it. Is they were to remember how bad it was. So there is this part of the remembrance of the Passover would have been very sad, wouldn't it? We were slaves. My grandfather was killed in Egypt. You know, I remember my grandmother had a broken arm where the masters beat her and broke her arm. See, especially in the early generations, they would have had a real connection. They could all remember. It'd be like talking to a Holocaust survivor today, right? You could talk to somebody that was really there and how bad it was. And they, you know, people in this country and in other countries have gone to great lengths that we don't forget that. God didn't build a museum, but He made a celebration so that they would never forget the affliction in Egypt. Okay, Tom? Okay. Let me finish reading and then we'll see what else. All right, verse 5. You may not eat the Passover sacrifice within any of your towns that the Lord your God is giving you, but at the place that the Lord your God will choose to make His name dwell in it, that same idea. There you shall offer this Passover sacrifice in the evening at sunset at the time you came out of Egypt. And you shall cook it and eat it at the place the Lord your God will choose. In the morning you shall turn and go to your tents. For 6 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day you shall be a solemn assembly to the Lord your God. You shall do no work on it. So that's the Sabbath. So besides the affliction, what were they supposed to remember? The affliction was the bad part of thinking about it. That God delivered them. By what? How did God deliver them?
By a mighty hand.
By a mighty hand. I mean, they were supposed to remember that the deliverance of God came through great strength. In other words, when you read it and you think, well, they got out of there at night, what might you think? Yeah, they snuck out, right? There were times where Paul got, you know, let out kind of secretly over a wall or whatever. You know, so but that's not what they were supposed to remember about the Passover. They were supposed to remember that Passover is God delivered, not barely, not almost, but by a mighty hand, His strength and His power in the deliverance of His people from the Passover. So remember the affliction, remember the strength and the power of God. What else should they remember about it? If you'd have been there, what else would you have remembered? Greg? Okay. Okay. But before that would be important, what would you remember? The cost. The cost. The firstborn of every family in Egypt died that night. I mean, it doesn't touch us now, right? Because we've heard the story 1,000 times. But imagine the firstborn of every family and of all the animals, right? Of the livestock died. What cost it took. Yeah, remember the affliction. Remember the strength of God. But remember the great cost it took to get you out of Egypt. Okay? So all those things are tied up in the Passover, right? The strength of God. The terrible affliction. Couldn't have done it without a mighty hand of God. Because they were captured by this great nation of Egypt. They were in bondage, not by some people that barely had them secure in place, but by a mighty nation that had them under their total control. And the cost to deliver these people out of bondage was the life of the firstborn. And that blood delivered them. Obedience to God by putting blood on the doorpost, right? The blood of the Lamb delivers them. Now think about that. Of all the feasts then that they come back and celebrate, it makes sense they would celebrate the Passover. Because what had they forgotten? Through all these kings, what had they forgotten? We've studied them all just about now. Yeah, they've forgotten. They've forgotten where they came from, how bad it was in Egypt. They've forgotten what else? The mighty hand of God, the strength of God. How had they shown they'd forgotten that? Disobedience. Idolatry. Right? When you worship an idol, what are you saying to God? You're not strong enough. You're strong. I mean, you're still a god. You're strong, but you're not strong enough. Right? So when they go back and celebrate the Passover, they're remembering, you don't think our God's strong enough? He delivered us by His mighty hand from this great nation, Egypt. Look, at the time of Josiah, what? Egypt is still a great and mighty nation. In fact, we'll find out later that they're the ones that are going to kill Josiah. But at that time, it looked like Egypt was going to be the world power. Assyria is diminishing, and it doesn't look like Babylon's going to be strong enough yet. It looks like Egypt is. So think about, as they're celebrating the Passover, they're thinking of how they see Egypt now, and think about, well, what if we were in captivity Egypt now? What would it take to get us out? And look at God's strength and power, and yet we've been worshiping all these other gods. Right? They totally missed that. And they've forgotten what? The cost of it. Because if you still assign great cost to it, you'd hold it in high value. Right? So think about it. There would be this remembrance of the difficulty, but the exaltation of God and the deliverance and the setting free from Egypt. And so you'd have all of this to remember. You'd remember some of it with sadness and some of it with great joy and exaltation and honoring and glory to God. And you would be amazed every time you celebrated the Passover of the power and the strength of God and His love for this people. Right? Greg, you had any?
Today, we have great-great-grandparents or something like that. We don't know anything about the sacrifices they've made that allowed our families to be what they are. We don't even think about it. We just come into the world and we're kind of taking it as it is. And then we take everything else for granted.
Yeah. So how does that get fixed? Today, how does that get fixed?
We need to recognize that we're not... It's not all us. There are people that come before us that we're dependent upon, and more importantly, that we're dependent upon God.
Yeah. Yeah, so the way you do that is you tell stories. You remind people of historical facts that have happened, right? We do that every year. We try to remember those who died in wars, right? And people will put flags on graves. You know, we try to say, hey, we need to remember. 9/11's been that way, right? There's always a big call. Don't forget. Remember what happened that day. Because the tendency is we're going to forget about it. Now, so is that the only reason then? I say the only reason. Those are pretty powerful reasons. Is that the reason then that the Passover would be exalted and why they would celebrate that feast above all the others? And the writers in Chronicles and Kings would emphasize that. Why else was it critical that they get the Passover and reinstitute it? Okay, Josiah, yeah, absolutely. And he does that in a way that's never been done until the judges. That might be part of what he's saying, right? He reaches out back to Israel, so there's this unification. We all came out of this. We all have this in common. I think that's right. What else? Yeah, I think it's easy to miss that. Yeah, and look, some of this we know, but I just want to remind us, Matthew 26, and we could look at a lot of different places, right? But in Matthew 26, they're instituting the Lord's Supper, and what's the occasion? Yeah, 26:17. Now, on the first day of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Jesus. Where will you have us prepare for you to eat the Passover? Now think about that. That when Jesus comes, there needs to be a people celebrating the Passover. Think about God's providence and how God is not God's providence they find the law. It's not God's providence there is a king that loves him and is willing to listen, and he reads and he sees and elevates the Passover. Hey, look, we're not going to get it all right, but one thing we're going to do for sure, we're going to celebrate the Passover. And you see that momentum come down. So that by the time Jesus gets here, they're celebrating the festivals again. And the Passover is a big deal. They get that. And because of that, Jesus then, that in verse 26, now they were eating, and Jesus took bread, and after blessing it, broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, take, eat, this is my body. This unleavened bread, right, which was called what? The bread of affliction, yeah. The bread of affliction. So now think about that. Think about that. So they're taking this, and when they eat the bread of affliction, do you think there's sadness? Should be. Because they were supposed to remember. What had happened to them for 400 years, they'd been mistreated in Egypt. Their own children were killed because the Pharaoh was worried about Moses being the deliverer, right? They should remember that. How could they forget that? How could they forget what was done to this mighty nation? What was done to them? How could they forget that? So as they're eating the Passover, they're remembering, as they eat this bread, they're remembering about the bread of affliction. And then Jesus says, "This is my body." This direct link, right? And then he goes on and says, verse 27, he took a cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, "Drink of it, all of you, for this is the blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins." And so they would remember the blood, right? And so by keeping the Passover, these two great reformers, Hezekiah and Josiah, are setting the foreshadowing of Christ in the Lord's Supper. And you see the similarities, right? There is sadness as we take the Lord's Supper. There's a realization as we break the bread that there was adversity. There was pain and difficulty and sorrow and mistreatment. And as we drink the cup, we're reminded that saving of blood saving us. But we're reminded what? There's great cost. There's great cost to be delivered out of sin. Sin is afflicting. Sin is terrible. As we take the Lord's Supper, shouldn't we remember the affliction of sin? Not in physical slavery, but in spiritual slavery. All that set up because these men, these two kings, Josiah, would say, "We've neglected to remember this." They didn't know that they were needing to remember it because Jesus was going to come. But God knew. And Josiah, by being obedient, exalts the Passover so that it can be linked eventually, hundreds of years later, to the Lord's Supper. All right? And in the 1 Corinthians chapter 5, the only place that this is stated, although it seems so obvious, it's only stated in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, where he's talking about withdrawing from this brother who's sexually immoral, right? And how they were supposed to do it. Deliver this man, verse 5, to Satan. Verse 6, "Your boasting is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens a whole lump? Cleanse out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, as you really are unleavened, for Christ, our Passover lamb, has been sacrificed." Lest the obvious connection could be missed, Paul says, "He is our Passover lamb." So I think that's why the Passover is lifted up in both these cases and is specifically talked about of all the things they did and all what it took to accomplish it, right? Because again, it's the days of it's the celebration of unleavened bread also connected with it. And Josiah goes through that. So in second, all right, so back to 2 Chronicles 35. Has anybody got any questions or comments on that? And I've in the updated Josiah, I've gone through and mentioned some of this and some of the verses that we went through. So if he restores the Passover again, what year does this happen? Do you remember? Because it's the same year that all the other things that he's done, the cleansing, the real cleansing that he's done, repairing the temple, all of it happens in this 18th year. So he's how old? 26 years old, right? An amazing year. That 18th year, his 26th year of life was an amazing year, right? So they restore the Passover. So as it talks about, verse chapter 35, again, they read the law, right? Josiah takes away all these abominations, because what's the point in keeping the Passover if you're gonna partake of it with a table of demons, right? Paul would talk about that in Corinthians, about blending the two things together, right? Idols and the Passover, the Lord's Supper. Same idea. So once he does that, chapter 35, verse 1, Josiah kept the Passover to the Lord in Jerusalem, and they slaughtered the Passover lamb on the 14th day of the first month. He appointed the priests to their offices and encouraged them in the service of the house of the Lord. And he said to the Levites who taught all Israel and were holy to the Lord. What were the Levites' job? This is echoed back in Leviticus too. I don't have it on here. The passage. What were the Levites' job? to teach. Yeah, the obvious job was to serve at the temple, right? But Leviticus and here, and a few other places, you get this thing, right? The Levites, he said to the Levites who taught all Israel and were holy to the Lord. Well, if the Levites taught all Israel, what happened? Not just the priests taught all Israel. Remember, the priests are only from the tribe of the family of Aaron. There are a lot more Levites than there are priests. The Levites' job were to teach Israel. So the leadership that God put in place so that what Greg said would never happen. We're going to set aside the tribe of Levi. They're going to be set aside for me. I'm going to give them this unique place. They're going to be supported, you know, by their brethren. So they'll have time to do what? Minister at the temple? Yeah. But what else? Teach. So, go ahead, Greg. Connection to the Passover. So if they should have taught anything, it should have been, we need to keep this Passover. It's pretty important. So I want us to think about that. So we are then, right, New Testament, what are Christians? We're priests, right? We're priests. So what are we supposed to teach? What are we supposed to remind? The new covenant, the Word of God, right? What should we be making sure we never forget? The celebration, right? The celebration. Because that's the connection all the way through. That's the importance of the Lord's Supper. So how in the world in Christianity could this get left out? Well, you could say, well, you know what? I know how. The same way the Sabbath could get left out. I mean, the Passover could get left out in the Old Testament. Just think, they went from every Christian celebrating the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week to somehow you'd never even know it existed. How in the world could that happen? Because we failed to teach. How did it happen? The Levites didn't do their job. They didn't teach. Because what? They assume what? Oh, everybody knows that. We take the Lord's Supper. Everybody knows what this is about. And that's why I appreciate the emphasis that we place when we take the Lord's Supper. I've grown up and been involved in congregations that didn't talk about it at all. Just men stood up and prayed about it. The assumption was what? Everybody out there, you guys know about that. We don't need to say the same thing every week. Everybody knows about this. And it's a neglecting to remember that part of what we're doing is teaching and reminding ourselves of what we were supposed to be connected to. This chain that's gone back from God delivering them out of the sin, out of the slavery of Egypt. This chain that He's connected to the Scriptures. That we're reminded of through Christ as we take the Lord's Supper. But if we don't teach, if we don't remind, then we'll lose it. There'll be a generation that comes up that won't know why we do it. Why do we do it every week? I mean, I'm teaching down at Marion, and we're in Hebrews chapter 10, and we get into, you know, about the assembly. And so we start talking about the assembly, and I start talking about the Lord's Supper. And you just think, I came out of left field. What? Well, that's just a tradition. We do it on the first day of the week. Nothing in the Bible says that. Y'all take the Lord's Supper every week? Where do you get that at? That's not in the Scriptures. I mean, these are men who are spending time reading and studying the Bible and would think they know something about the Bible. And most of them are pretty knowledgeable. But at some point, they missed it. And if we think that can't happen to us, then we think we're better than them. We're missing the lesson here. We're missing the lesson. We're missing the lesson that we better be teaching the truths about this and never forget this celebration, or we will at some point pay the consequence, pay the price for that inaction. Greg?
To remind 1 Corinthians 5, the whole book of celebrating the feast of unleavened bread, not with a physical unleavened bread, but with removing the sin from our lives.
Amen.
And that's what that was really pointing to.
Amen. So think about it. When they find the book of the law, they have to reteach the Levites, because the Levites don't know about this, presumably. So as they're reading it, somebody has to sit down and read it and figure it out, make some connections, and go back and read some more and finally get it. And then somebody has to explain that to the Levites, or the Levites teach themselves. And now, he said, it's their job to teach everybody else. So part of what Josiah is doing is he's going all around, is he's taking the Levites with him. What are they having to do? Imagine, you go up to the northern kingdoms and you say, hey, y'all need to come to Jerusalem. We're going to celebrate the Passover. What? The Passover? Yeah, we're going to, for 7 days, we're going to eat unleavened bread. That doesn't sound like, I'm not going down there for that. Why? Why would we eat unleavened bread? Well, it's the bread of adversity. My life's pretty good. What do you mean the bread of adversity? And they're going to have to reteach him about Egypt and reteach him about slavery and reteach him about why God instituted the Passover. This was not a, hey, y'all just come on down and celebrate this. Celebrate something we don't know anything about. You see, there was a lot of teaching involved. I think sometimes we neglect that. We think we just make a statement and everybody's just supposed to fall in lockstep. But there's teaching that goes along with that. And so part of what Josiah, I think, saw in this, and where he has wisdom, is he teaches as he goes. Did somebody else have their hand up? I thought I saw. Look at Leviticus chapter 10. That was the other verse that I had about the Levites. I think it's worth reading. Leviticus 10. This is immediately after. I mean, if you go back to the beginning of chapter 10, my Bible's on the other page. But this is where Nadab and Abihu are killed for offering strange fire. Okay? This is like at the exact same time. This is right after this has happened, not months later. And he's already warned Aaron, look, do not cut your beard. Do not show any sorrow for those boys of yours that just were an abomination to me because of what they did. In that setting, in verse 8, and the Lord spoke to Aaron, saying, drink no wine or strong drink, you or your sons with you, when you go into the tent of meeting, lest you die. You're not going to come in here soused to serve me, right? Remember, we see this later on, don't we? Where priests are drunk. We see this in denominations, where men use wine in the celebration of their religious festivities and become intoxicated. He says, it shall be a statute forever throughout your generations. You are to distinguish between the holy and the common, and between the clean and the unclean. Well, how? How are the people going to know? Aaron, you're supposed to know. You and your children are supposed to distinguish between the clean and the unclean, the common and the uncommon. How? And you are to teach the people of Israel all the statutes that the Lord has spoken to them by Moses. Here, very specific to the priests, right? How are people in the world, or how are people in the church that are young and coming along, how are they going to know the difference between what's holy and common? They have to be taught. Who is going to teach the world what's the difference between holy and common? Jerry. Jerry's going to do that, because he's a full-time evangelist. Who's going to do it? The priests. We are a royal priesthood. Then that means we are the ones that are going to have to go out in the world and say, you know what? That's wrong. That's not right. Because guess what? They don't know it's wrong. They don't get it a lot of times. And they don't get it because they don't know the statutes, the ordinance of God. They don't know the Word of God. So as we go into the world and preach the gospel, what we're also preaching and teaching is the difference between what's common and what's holy. We're teaching the difference between what's right and what's wrong. If we don't do it, the world will never understand the difference between right and wrong. That's the challenge. And we've got such a great example of a nation that God picked out, of people that at one time understood that and followed it and did it. And what happened when they stopped teaching? The priests and the Levites stopped doing their job. They stopped teaching and they forgot all about the Passover. If we don't do that, the same thing will happen to us. It is our mission. It is our calling by God to teach and remind about these things within our fellowship Justin talked about Ephesians chapter 4 on Sunday there. The idea of what? There can only be unity around the truth of what's right and what's wrong, what's common and uncommon. That's the only place you can have unity. We teach it within our fellowship and we show it to the world. We show to the world what's right and what's wrong. So when we don't do that, we're failing the way the Israelites and the priesthood failed. And we're not accomplishing what God wants us to accomplish. Okay? I think I'm preaching tonight instead of teaching class. I don't know why it's turned out that way, but sorry. Verse 3, back to 2 Chronicles 35. Verse 3. And he said to the Levites, taught all Israel holy to the Lord, put the holy ark in the house of God. Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, built. You need not carry it on your shoulders. We referenced this a couple weeks ago. So the ark had not been in the house of God, but now they realize it needs to be in the house of God. There's a good reason to put it in the house of God, because now we're going to start following God. We're going to start doing what He says. So the ark goes back in the house of God. Verse 4, prepare yourselves according to your father's houses by your divisions as prescribed in the writing of David, king of Israel. Why did they go back to David? We talked about this with Hezekiah, but I think it's important. Why did they go back to David? Why didn't Josiah say, hey, you guys, you just figure it out. Get everybody divided up like they should. Prepare yourselves by the houses like you see fit. Because you have a heart for God and you'll get it right. God will be pleased with it. Why did they go back to David?
But the
division, he didn't prescribe. I don't think they're talking about the carrying. I think they're talking about prepare yourselves according to your father's house by divisions as described in the writing of David, king of Israel, and the document of Solomon's son. Right? Yeah, you're right there. I didn't think about that. Great. Yeah, it's the A word. What's the A word?
Authority.
It's authority. I mean, just think about it. We just said, you know, what if a group of people just said to themselves, hey, look, we just want to serve God and we want to start a church. What do you think we should do in worship to God? Well, I think we should do this. Now, do you see what people who love God would do? They'd go back and they'd say, what's the authority? Where do we get the authority? This has been 400 years since David. And yet Josiah and the priests recognize that we have a formula to follow. We have example. We have command. We have inference. We have all these methods of communication that God's used and laid out for us. We need to go back and do it the way they said to do it. David and Solomon. So David and Solomon were only connected, though, with what? In the area of authority. They're only connected with what? Daniel, you know? I'll call on you anyway. I don't care. You know? They're connected with what? What are David and Solomon uniquely connected with? The temple. Absolutely. They can't go back to Moses to figure out how to divide up the divisions for the temple. They're not there. And if David and Solomon don't do it, then guess what? They have authority then to do it however they see fit. But David and Solomon did. And where did they get it from? From God. Directly from God. So when they're following David and Solomon, they're following God. Because go on, he says in verse 5, and stand in the holy place according to the groupings of the father's houses, or your brothers the lay people, and according to the divisions of Levites by father's household, and slaughter the Passover lamb, and consecrate yourselves, and prepare your brothers to do according to the word of the Lord by Moses. Why Moses here? Why not according to David and Solomon? Yeah. Because David and Solomon didn't have authority to tell the people how to do the Passover. So David and Solomon, when they inaugurate the temple and they do the first Passover in the temple or in the city with the temples there, what do they go back to? They go back to Moses, because Moses is the source of authority. And you see that. So everything they're doing is they talk about all this stuff. As they see it, he goes down again, verse 11. They slaughtered the Passover lamb and the priests through the blood that they received from them, while the Levites flayed the sacrifices. And they set aside the burnt offerings that they might distribute them according to the groupings of the fathers' houses of the lay people to offer to the Lord as it is written in the book of Moses. And so they did with the bulls, and they roasted the Passover lamb with fire according to the rule. They went back and said, hey, we found this book of the law. It talks about the Passover. Therefore, we need to follow what it says. That's our authority. They got that. They got David and Solomon. Follow what they said about the temple and all those things. Go back to Moses and follow what he said about keeping the Passover. And if you go on, he talks about verse 14. Afterward, they prepared for themselves for the priests, because the priests, the sons of Aaron, were offering the burnt offerings, the fat parts until night. So the Levites prepared for themselves and for the priests, the sons of Aaron. The singers, the sons of Asaph, were in their place according to the command of David. See, David didn't establish the Levitical priesthood. Who did? Moses. But David established the singing, the worship, all those things around the temple. David established that. So they go back and they follow and set up the singers, the sons of Asaph, according to David. Okay, we'll real quick, verse 18. No Passover like it had been kept in Israel since the days of Samuel the prophet. None of the kings of Israel had kept such a Passover as was kept by Josiah and the priests and the Levites and all Judah and Israel who were present and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And in the 18th year of the reign of Josiah, this Passover was kept. What a Passover that must have been. I just can't imagine. Okay, we'll talk about the death of Josiah and then get into Jehoaz next week's singing, right? So 2 weeks. Thank you.